Welcome to the Gemini Podcast, Astro Babes. I'm Shade the Mad, and with me as always is my fellow star slut, Alice Alistair. Hi, Alice.
Hello, hello.
Alice, guess what time it is?
Oh, God. What time is it?
It's Aries time.
Oh, boy.
It's war time. Time to fight.
Mars theme plays.
Wait, are we talking about the Mars from Holst?
Yes. There we go. That's not a trademarked recording. Suck it, copyright.
No, definitely not. Also, please don't sue us.
Yeah. Oh boy, Aries o'clock. One of my favorite times.
Yes. Yes. I'm very excited to be discussing our first of these zodiac signs. Even though, as we discussed in great length last time, how your sun sign is not the only sign that you should pay attention to. That there's a whole slew of things to look at and learn about in your birth chart. So if you managed to make it through the last episode in one piece, and with your brain intact, you must be a Gemini.
And yeah, congratulations, folks. That is the hardest part, I promise.
And if not, no worries. We will continue to break down all those various elements of the zodiac and of your birth chart and kind of do deeper dives into those details. I mean, we talked a lot when we talked about basically the signs, which is, you know, Gemini, Capricorn, Cancer, yada yada. We talked about the various houses of your chart. We talked about the aspects, which is sort of the relationship between planets in your birth chart and the positions that they find themselves in. And was that all we discussed last time?
I know, right? It's interesting, annoying, fun, all of those things simultaneously, that there's so much to all of that, and yet it is also so little.
Yeah, it is complicated in the best way possible, I would say. Like, it's a labor of love if you really want to learn about, you know, yourself or the people around you. I have sort of an interesting topic that we're just going to lightly brush against for my when we travel down the rabbit hole later. But I'm kind of I'll be interested to know if you have experienced other instances where birth charts have been used in other sort of ways, I guess. And we'll leave it at that. There's your little breadcrumb. Don't eat it all in one bite.
Oh boy, mystery music ensues. I'm excited for this.
Do you just have like a constant like soundtrack playing in your head for these moments?
You know, yes. I mean, yes, and like outside of my head a lot of the time too. I log a lot of hours with a lot of background music, which I was really blessed to break the trend from this morning, because I'm a terrible musician for saying this and terrible composer, but I gotta remind myself to like only be listening to music sometimes, which is a thing I used to do a lot in high school, you know, because I feel like it's pretty common for a lot of people to have music on as a background thing, like to not just be sitting and listening to music and doing nothing else.
Sure.
So yeah, this morning was like the rare light shining through the clouds where I got to just sit and listen to some music for a while, and it was lit as fuck.
What did you listen to?
This morning was so cool. I had this piece called, what the hell was it? It was in French. It was by Ravel, and it was orchestrated by Granger, which you probably remember from our wind band days.
Yeah. Insider secret. Alice and I went to school together, and we were both band nerds. Right. One of us is still technically a band nerd. The other gave in to her Gemini tendencies and moved on to other interests.
I was going to say, you can't escape the curse that easily. It's going to find you. But Valley of the Bells, I think, is what it translates to, and it is solid ear candy.
Yeah, you know, I don't, I'm trying to think, when was the last time that I just listened to music? I'm definitely a background music kind of person. I honestly can't remember the last time I just listened to music, just for the sake of listening to music, so. Wow. But I have before, and I know it's, like, an enjoyable experience, but, yeah, I'll have to maybe make it a point to do that more often.
It can feel like a luxury, or a chore, I guess, maybe, but I don't know, maybe if you pick the right music, pick something that's going to be interesting enough to focus on.
Right. Okay, so anyways, enough about us. Let's talk about Aries. You have a lot of Aries friends?
I do, actually. I love my Ram Squad, and they've been some of the people that I have most readily gotten close with and just vibe with, you know?
Yeah, nice.
What about you?
I really only, that I can think of, before yesterday or the day before, I think I only had, like, two Aries people in, like, regularly in my life. And then it turns out that I work with, like, a ton of them.
Hmm.
So there are more Aries than I originally thought in my immediate atmosphere. maybe now I might, after having researched all this, I might be able to pick up on, like, be a little more sensitive to Aries people and the vibes they give off. But, yeah, I never would have. Aries, to me, has always been one of the sort of, like, background players of the Zodiac. But I'll tell you what, this research has definitely changed my mind about it. There's a lot to love about an Aries. I have recently learned that, like, in my birth chart, I have Mars in Aries. And
you do.
I do. And so now I'm, like, making it a point to, like, look for that in my life and, like, throughout my day, you know, just to see if I can, like, pick up on how that's influenced. It's still a work in progress, but you know, I'm excited, I guess, to continue to look for examples like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Didn't realize you had any Aries placements, and I feel like Mars is an interesting one to start learning about, especially, like, just looking through one's own chart and trying to see the influence of Mars. It's also relevant to today because Mars is the planetary ruler of Aries, so they share kind of that spirit.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the basics for Aries. I did know before any of this that Mars was the ruling planet for Aries. I don't know where exactly the, like, knowledge of that came into play, or, like, where I learned it, or why it was so, like, firmly set in my mind. I think I just knew that Mars is, like, the god of war, and that Aries have a tendency to be warriors, like, fighters, like, they have that fighting spirit or whatever. So that had just was, like, a really easy connection for me to solidify the two together. And I guess it makes sense that they would be, like, what's their element that they're associated with?
Fire. They're, yeah, I mean, it's a fun fit. And sometimes the layers can just be so layered, like, like, yeah. You've got Mars and, like, the red of the fire and the blood and, like, the intensity and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got fire. We have Mars is the ruling planet. This is a cardinal sign, right? Not mutable, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mars territory, Aries territory is very much that of, like, starting things that have not started before, kind of leaping out into the unknown, things that require some guts, or maybe historically cojones, or, you know, like, just some spunk of whatever sort, and a lot of it lines up really well.
Oh. Spunk as in, like, moxie, or spunk as in, like...
See, oh, damn. I mean, that is kind of the beautiful thing. Like, yeah. It's kind of at the heart of the matter, like, with Aries and Mars, and, like, even the symbols that we use for them to depict them, they are, like, penetrative types of symbols. And we can think about both ways that that works, you know? We think about, like, life sprouting from the seed.
Yes.
Or the seed sprouting into what is going to become a new life, like all of it.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
And cycling back to, like, the symbolism of the ram and Mars, it's a little bit more obvious. We got a little pointy little thing going on there. And the ram, butt in the head, it's, I don't want to say just brute force energy, but that can be a flavor of what's going on in Aries land.
Yeah. See, I just don't, I don't have a good enough, like, exposure to Aries people to know how much that rings true as far as, like, my grandma on my mom's side was an Aries, and she definitely had a temper, and just, like, this, she wasn't mean, but she was very stern and very strict, and she carried that, she had that energy about her. So, like, I can definitely see that in her. But then, like, I know other Aries who are, like, not really confrontational or... So, like, it's... There's... I have a genuinely mixed bag of Aries types that I'm still... like, it's still a little murky for me, I guess. But, One of the, and we're totally going to get into more of what Aries are like, what they want out of life, that kind of stuff. But one of my favorite things is to kind of research the, like, mythos behind these signs. And, like, I like Greek mythology. I'm not Greek, and I'm not a historian. I'm especially not a Greek historian, but I did read the so-called origin story of the constellation and, like, the myth behind the creation of Aries. Are you familiar with that?
I've got to be in some part of the brain, but why don't you refresh me? I think that part might be broken right now.
Okay. Well, Aries, first of all, is Latin for ram, right? But not... necessarily in the context of the animal, but more like as in a battering ram.
Oh my god. Wow.
Or like force, like to ram something, right?
Cool.
Yeah, right? The symbol obviously looks like ram's horns, and you kind of nailed it as far as it sort of looking like a new, spring shoot, like, coming forth out of the ground. Those, like, tender little tiny shoots, they technically put out a lot of energy trying to, you know, burst through the surface to reach the sun. So, you know, there's lots of, like, new life energy, life force. You could say the symbol for Aries also looks like a water spout or like a fountain.
Oh, I love that.
Water being, yeah, like water just being the source of life, at least here on Earth, you know. So
I fucking really love that. Wow. How have I never thought of the fountain? That's amazing.
Yeah. I did find two separate but similar stories, one that pertained or, like, related to Poseidon, and one that pertained to Zeus in terms of the creation of the Aries constellation. The ram has an association with power and fertility, and it was a sacred animal in ancient cultures. In the first one, Poseidon, who of course is the god of the sea, he took the form of a ram in order to sire a winged ram with golden fleece. This is where the golden fleece story comes into play, right?
Okay.
And later, there was a goddess who appeared in the form of this same golden ram in order to carry her two sons to safety after they were set to be sacrificed. And one of the sons died along the way, and the other one survived, and the one that survived sacrificed the ram to Poseidon, and Poseidon turned the ram into the constellation Aries. In the other version, it's basically essentially the same. It was a little bit more in depth. Basically, the golden ram was sent to save the one son first from a horrible death, and his mother was the goddess of the clouds, the son that survived, right?
Okay. So... Yeah.
She was the goddess of the clouds, yes. He had a twin brother, and when their father got remarried, basically it's an evil stepmother story, she became jealous of the two sons and the inheritance that they would get, so she caused a famine to happen and in their land, and... then she convinced they went to Delphi and, consulted with the fates or whatever. And, she bribed a soothsayer, to say that in order to save the land from this famine, the king would have to sacrifice both of his sons. So they're on the chopping block about to be beheaded to the gods in order to stop this famine. And their mother, the goddess of the clouds, sends the golden ram to scoop them up, and he flies them to safety. But along the way, one of the brothers falls off and drowns in the sea. And then the ram obviously gets sacrificed to Zeus, and Zeus creates the constellation Aries to honor the ram and its bravery.
That's really interesting that the traits that are the same about those stories are the same, and that last one was so juicy or had a lot more drama going on.
right. I thought it was interesting. Not that anybody asked, but my favorite Greek mythology story is the Golden Apple of Discord.
That's because
it's it's very Gemini mischief energy to me, so we'll talk about it during Gemini month.
Wow. Well, thank you for enlightening me on that. I did not know that story, or either of those stories, actually. So we've already hinted a little bit at the hero vibe, maybe. So far we've said that there's maybe some brutishness and some danger involved with Aries territory. New life also, though, and some very tender and beautiful things. It's not all just force and ramming and battering and stuff like that. but those stories do have a little bit of that heroic flavor for sure.
Yeah.
Not that a lot of myths don't have some degree of hero and heroine drama going on.
Right.
And that is, it's a good point to say with thinking about these signs, thinking about the characteristics, the types that are the signs, basically, it's really easy to think about caricature and myth status stuff, real big, real dramatic, real obvious. But most of the time, it's not going to look like that, these can be really micro scale, beginnings and assertions and heroic deeds and facing the scariness and adrenaline.
Just being brave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we know, it's safe to say that they're very assertive people, or they tend to be, right?
Or they're learning to be assertive. I mean, that's sometimes you can look at the chart and, based on whether that Aries placement is interacting with the sixth house versus the first house versus the 10th house, or maybe some aspects to Mars or some of the other like detail factors, you can bring in a little bit of like expectation or interpretation of whether or not the characteristic traits are kind of already there to some degree or are kind of being hindered in some way, they're being like really ramped up in some way. All of those possibilities are there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I feel like there's a really important distinction to make when it comes to Aries, because I think a lot of times they get described as being self-centered. And from what I could suss out, that comes from the fact that Aries and Mars are sort of, they're associated with the first house, which is identity based, right? So it has this tendency to be like, me first, you know, I come first. You know, it makes them come off as self-centered. But I think that there's an important distinction that needs to be made where it's like, yes, Aries does make it a point, generally, to help themselves first. But it's not that they don't, like, care or take into account the people around them. It's that they want to be the best that they can be and in the best possible position, because that is what allows them to give the most of themselves to other people. Like, they're, you know, if they're feeling good and feeling secure and feeling, you know, comfortable in their position in life, then it's much easier to gain the help of an Aries, and an Aries will help you get there, because that's what they do. They're, you know, they're the, like, in group projects, they're the people who, you know, come up with the plan and start it first, you know. it is not self-centered. Like, it's not attention-seeking. It's not trying to garner recognition from outside sources. It's all about, you know, the self and how they can best feel confident in what they're doing, that kind of thing. Am I correct?
Yeah, yeah, I like that a lot. That's really shining the positive light on that whole process.
I did write down some key words that I saw, like, over and over and over again when I was researching
Aries. Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
I have brave. I have brutally honest.
Brute again.
Yes, which is like, yeah, okay, join the club. intense. Confrontational, self-centered, fast, impatient, active, and goal-driven.
Those all fit with that sort of boldness, and it takes some real, like, effort and belief and verve to believe in yourself and take care of yourself and, like, have that independence, or it can feel that way. Yeah. And, like, that balancing, like, that tightrope act between taking care of those things, having enough belief in self, having enough boldness to, you know, take scary first steps and things like that, that is so important and is also, like, I mean, all of the signs can be looked at as this sort of, like, tightrope and, like, a spectrum, of course, where...
Sure.
Like, the destructive or constructive sides of each sign are so, like, they're both connected to the same energy, you know? And it's kind of like the difference between medicine and poison. The amount really matters, because even medicine can be poison.
right, yeah.
And, like, with that Aries thing, it's like the difference between bold and brash or belongs in the trash is that balancing of...
Was that a SpongeBob reference?
Yes. Because sometimes, yeah, you need the bold and the brash, and sometimes you need that self-focus to get shit started, to, you know, be able to preserve yourself, to take your own needs into consideration first, and then be able to help other people get their oxygen mask on. It's really easy to forget about that shit sometimes.
So, if you are an Aries and you see some of this in yourself, maybe... consider asking yourself, what is the motive behind your selfishness? You know, is the end game to for your own benefit, or is it for the benefit of others?
Yeah.
Because I think that is possible, in my opinion. It is possible for you to, you know, want to take care, better care of yourself in order to help take better care of other people, you know. So
absolutely. I feel like I want to say to the Aries people specifically that, like, it can be firecracker energy sometimes. It can be, like, grenade energy sometimes, like, navigating Aries territory. And if you're self-conscious about that, maybe you're like, oh, man, this damn explosive that is nothing but a liability and does nothing but blow shit up, like, there's a time and a place for explosives, and controlled demolition is absolutely a thing. you know, sometimes very deliberate breaking of things so that new things can be made is a thing.
Yeah.
Deep down, it's the same root, you know, that produces, like, kind of the extremities one way or the other, like the constructive or destructive stuff. Sometimes you want to just get as far away from, like, the negative side of things as you possibly can, that you throw the baby out with the bathwater. And with the signs in particular, like, it can be a really weird, like, witchcraft or, like, healing, essentially, to take up that problem energy, that scary energy, whatever it is, whatever it feels like, and, like, hold it close instead of trying to run away from it. Try to see what it really wants.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That was beautiful.
there was my Dr. Phil moment for the day.
Yeah. Also see Aries in leadership positions as well, right? They like to, I mean, whether they're put there or they choose to be there, something just kind of naturally funnels Aries into positions of power, basically, right? Not necessarily power, but just, it's not about the power, it's just about being the one to lead.
Yeah, hearing you saying that is it's stimulating, and I've got my smirk on because I can't speak for all Aries, and there are as many different Aries experiences as there are Aries placements in the world. But doing that and experiencing that flavor myself, a part of it is the adventure, you know? Like, it's very much the part of me that I ascribe to, like, wanting the adrenaline rush, wanting to shoot off the firework and, you know, be the one to light the wick and all that. You don't have to be interested in power to be a leader. You don't have to be leading to be interested in power. But I feel like some of the heart of that Aries process, that Aries energy, can really interact at that intersection intensely. Because it's like, it is empowering, you know, like in a positive sense, to do scary shit and then realize that you can do it. It is empowering and uplifting to take the first step and, you know, be in charge sometimes.
Yeah. Very much daredevil type energy.
Yeah, shit can go wrong. Especially with leadership, you know, like if you're the person kind of encouraging things to happen, there's definitely expectations, at least, of responsibility oftentimes. And if you are kind of the avant-garde, you are the head of the charge, you know, you're going to be, like, either leading people into danger or potentially Edenic territories, you know? Like, we're breaking out of the seed, folks.
Yeah.
Who knows what's out there?
So you have, a few pointers for how to navigate the experience of being an Aries, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Calculated risk-taking can be a great way to both harness that boldness and kind of leadership power and all of that, and also cultivates like your courage, because that's one of the highest ideals for Aries. There is, you've got this potentially explosive energy, potentially dangerous energy, potentially potent in a really great way, leadership energy, and so much of it boils down to whether or not it's being used in a way that is defying the fears that hold us back and, you know, leading the charge into something beautiful and helpful, or doing stupid death-defying shit, basically.
Sure. I mean, impulsivity is kind of a thing for Aries, right?
Mm-hmm.
that was a very tight-lipped agreement.
It's, yep, being in the driver's seat of that particular process, I really encourage the deliberate and, like, intentional. Like, I am intending to do something that is out of my comfort zone. I am intending to do something that is at maybe danger to my either feeling safe or literally being safe. And I'm talking about, you know, anything from rock climbing to, you know, anything that would get the adrenaline pumping, like, having a conversation with a stranger could be that thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, something as, like, brutish.
Like asking your boss for a raise.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that. And one can use those deliberate moments, those I'm going to plan to take this risk and navigate that what it feels like to be rushed with adrenaline and have my heart beating, and you get some practice, because, you know, I'm sure everybody, Aries placements or not, can relate to being flustered by adrenaline at least once in their lives.
Of course.
And, you know, it's like practicing it. It is like so many other things, where if you take the time to practice how you choose to be, practice staying present and practice feeling what it feels like to be in those kinds of headspaces, when they just spontaneously happen, you might be a little bit more prepared to respond in a graceful or precise or whatever way you're trying to respond in, instead of just, you know, survival mode.
Very, very cool. Very cool. This is part of the reason why I love Aries so much, I guess. I mean, I share the impulsivity, but with the like Gemini energy, it's far less thought out and explosive and kind of just dumb energy. Like,
I love that you say that, because it feels like that so hard sometimes. Just like Gemini is such a damn, like,
it's directionless impulsivity. It's like, did I really need to buy a 50-pound bag of gummy bears from Amazon? No. Did I buy a 50-pound bag of gummy bears from Amazon? Fuck yes, I did.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun sometimes.
You also had talked a little bit about, like, Aries sort of needing to be in conflict with people, right?
Ooh, yeah, yeah. Thank you for bringing that back up. Again, the controlled demolition thing, you know, sometimes conflict is necessary, sometimes it's unavoidable. I think a lot of that comes down to the leadership, the thrill, the power, like, that kind of intersection of these ideas and feelings and intentionalities. They involve maybe asserting my wishes in the face of somebody else's wishes. Like, maybe the boss doesn't want to pay me more. Maybe the boss does. Either way, there's a little bit of risk. Maybe there's conflict. Maybe there's not. Some of that relates to that confidence in self. Like, sometimes you've got to engage in some conflicts to be able to prove yourself to yourself.
Sure.
Or prove yourself to others. Yeah, it's something that is... it's growing for the Aries placements and Aries people, you know, either growing the ability to do it, finding the place to do it, finding the places not to have conflicts. Like, understanding your Aries and your Mars even can be one way of understanding how you engage in conflict naturally, how you might want to engage in conflict a little more deliberately and with a battle plan. And... it can be an indicator also of the things that are most scary in order to, like, prove yourself, in order to do the bold thing, in order to feel that adrenaline in the first place, there's got to be something scary.
Some sort of catalyst that forces that action.
Yeah, and like the shell, we got the breaking out of the shell, breaking out of the seed, all of that kind of stuff. It's like, even if the conflict is not as mythic status and doesn't have Holst's Mars playing in the background and might not even feel that intense at a like personal emotional level, like those are the places where that boldness and that assertiveness and sometimes also the impulsivity can be helpful, you know? Sometimes like you're in that moment of indecision and it's like either shit or get off the pot, and if I don't make this decision now, I'm gonna be too afraid to do it.
Yeah. And more times than not, hopefully any, you know, Aries that are out there and in the right mindset will take those moments as, and I guess anybody really, to be honest, but will take those moments as lessons, you know, going forward, you know, what did we learn? maybe don't try to chomp into a cactus despite the impulse.
Oh God, that is too real. Oh, it's embarrassingly real.
I mean, that makes Aries sound a lot dumber than I intend to, but
yeah, you might just be talking to an especially dumb Aries placement person right here, not gonna lie.
Well, I mean, come on, like, if you're in a group of people and somebody dares you to do it, you're not gonna not do it, because then you're not gonna come off as brave, right?
It is painfully real. If anybody watched Wonder Showzen back in the day, there was like that scene where it was like fun and danger, like flashing alternating over some scene. And I was just like, oh man, that is big Aries energy right there.
For anybody who hasn't seen Wonder Showzen, please watch it. It's available on CBS All Access.
Is it really?
It is, really. I was gonna text you the other day and tell you, and then I forgot because it was really, really super late at night. Yeah.
Of all places, wow. I would not have guessed.
Yeah. I saw it. I was going through and watching all of the classic Nickelodeon cartoon intros for like Angry Beavers and All Real Monsters and Doug and thoroughly freaking out my husband because that was not his generation of cartoons. So his cartoons
Hallmark
were
of a good cartoon,
right? His cartoons were like G.I. Joe and He-Man, and so I got to the end of that and started just like randomly scrolling through what else was available, and lo and behold, Wonder Showzen. And I was like, oh my god, I'm not even gonna try and show him Wonder Showzen.
That's probably a good idea. Yeah, for folks who don't know and might not be inclined to wanting to watch, like,
it's like shitpost TV 1.0.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I'm like trying not to say too much of like any flavor on it in particular, but it is a strong flavor. Yes. It is like Sesame Street on several different drugs simultaneously, and a lot of all of them. yeah, there are some real fun moments, though, if you like that degree of brashness.
Yes, yeah. Okay, well, anything else that you want to cover? I have one more thing that I want to talk about with Aries that is related, but did you have anything else that you wanted to cover in terms of how to navigate being an Aries? We're covering more next week. This is just part one, but
if you've identified with any of those images or impulses or traits, like, I just encourage, you know, deliberately working with that potential leadership power, that potential hero energy or heroine or heroex, like, or whatever our damn terminology becomes, because
right.
Language be like.
Right.
I feel like I'm just giving the motivational pep talk to somebody who has not had the easiest time, or maybe not had the the role available to them to be able to live out this sort of, like, energy. Because, you know, like, it's not always the most popular thing to be, like, starting conflicts. It's not always the most fun thing to be, like, in real dangerous states or, you know, whatever it is that's that scary to you, whatever it is. Just acknowledging that some of the Aries process, not all of it, a lot of it can be quite fun and enriching and beautiful. Some of it can have, like all of the signs, some real teeth to it. And you're not going to get it right the first time. Same can be said of all the signs.
Right.
So hopefully just thinking about these potential uses for those things, these potential goods, like, I hope you feel encouraged. I hope you feel like you have some maybe ideas about where to use that boldness.
Yeah. And I think maybe next week we'll talk a little bit about like common career paths and that type of stuff that we see in Aries people. Do you have a favorite famous Aries at all?
That one is very tough.
I don't, personally. I just wondered if you did.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think I will leave that at I don't know.
Well, I've got a few examples of what I think are pretty good. I've got three.
Beautiful.
Examples of, like, career paths and embodiments of Aries that people will know. The first being Peyton Manning,
the nice
former quarterback for the Denver Broncos and, I don't know, some lame-ass team in Indianapolis, probably.
And the hate mail will start rolling in.
What hate mail? There's nobody down there who cares. Just kidding. no. obviously, you know, athletic, leadership role, career driven. There's also the one and only Lady Gaga, who is an Aries as well.
And she is.
Fierce.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yep.
She's fierce, she's a fighter, she's outspoken, she's never been afraid of conflict, as far as I mean, she handles conflict with such grace and poise, it's enviable by, or should be enviable by all people. And last but not least, Robert Downey Jr., who, I guess, like, the biggest, most obvious Aries thing for me is his, like, ability to come back stronger, to rebuild himself from that lowest point, and not just to rebuild himself, but dude came back swinging with Iron Man. It was the first movie in the Marvel Universe. Well, okay, we're not talking, just before all you damn nerds get on my case, I'm not talking about Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies, you know, I realize that Blade is technically a Marvel movie, you all know the distinction and what the fuck I'm talking about, so don't you at me, okay? But yes, it was Iron Man. The first Iron Man was the, like, beginning of the modern MCU, and arguably Iron Man is the leader of the Avengers. A lot of people will say, oh, it's Captain America, but come on. Iron Man died for you, okay? He died for you.
You can't really beat that.
Not to mention, excuse me, what color does Iron Man wear? What color? Red. He wears red, okay?
Oh, God, I love that. I was just thinking back to our Aries origin story that you were enlightening us with earlier, and, like, the self-sacrifice, and it sounds like Iron Man has big Aries vibes. like the character.
Yeah, totally. I mean, but he's got to have some sort of, like, I don't know, Gemini, or, like, he's got to have something really, really great and witty in his, like, Mercury placement, because he's just, like, shoots off those quips rapid fire, you know? It's very, very, very entertaining stuff. And without putting any kind of pressure on you, you should absolutely make time to become a part of the MCU fandom, because there's a lot of great, great entertainment content in that.
I know, I'm gonna eventually.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go down the rabbit hole. Are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If I ever go an episode without mentioning something true crime related, then maybe check my pulse, because I probably died.
Well, this is the first time our rabbit hole will be true crime, I take it.
Yeah. I'm in true Crypt Keeper fashion, my lovelies, boils and ghouls.
And non-boonaries. Sorry.
And non-boonaries, I love that. I call this one Fish Out of Water.
Oh my god. All right, and now Tales from the Crypt theme plays.
Yes. Oh, yes. Danny Elfman. Classic.
Yeah.
So, in the last episode, I had mentioned the most popular sign among serial killers. And I think I said cancer or some shit, and this is why you don't believe everything that you read on Facebook, unless it was posted on the Gemini Podcast's Facebook page, because we would never leave you astray. but Pisces is the most common sign among serial killers.
That one rings more of a familiar bell now.
Yes. Yeah. John Wayne Gacy, Richard Ramirez, Randy Kraft, also known as the Scorecard Killer, Eileen Wuornos, who they created that movie with Charlize Theron, Monster, about.
Okay.
All Pisces. They are strongly followed up by Gemini and, I believe, Sagittarius. You know, Pisces are just barely pulling it out over the rest of us crazies. I did find an article that talked a little bit more about their birth charts and kind of the specifics of, like, what maybe points to their tendency towards becoming serial killers or people who victimize other people. There are a few patterns that emerge. Ted Bundy, Andrew Cunanan, who was the man who killed Gianni Versace.
Like Versace Versace? Or
yes, like the designer Versace, yes.
Oh, wow. Damn.
Yeah. You've never heard the story about Andrew Cunanan and Versace?
No.
Really? It's a good one. Anyways, Ted Bundy, Andrew Cunanan, Richard Ramirez, and the Scorecard Killer, Randy Kraft, all share a couple of key aspects. They have a really harsh and tense aspect with Pluto, and a soft and supportive one with Mercury. So Pluto being sort of death-based and like repressed, like a ruler for repressed psychological issues, right? Mm-hmm. And like when it's poorly aspected with something in your chart, it can kind of cause self-sabotaging behaviors, right? And Mercury, this like soft supportive one, makes them very, you know, like
charming.
Like, yes, very charming, very convincing in their outward lives. They, you know, that's how you get the distinction between, you know, looking like an absolute weirdo driving up in your free candy van and actually convincing somebody to hop inside. Yeah.
Our sly talking slick Mercury That's interesting, yep. Hearing those pairings.
Yes, and this is the thing that I was going to tell you about and see if you had heard any, like, other stories or instances where birth charts are used in sort of offbeat ways, because forensic astrology is a thing.
Pause for one damn second. Like, this is a legit question to anyone who's perceiving this and might have a good answer. Like, is there a damn word that means both totally unsurprising and totally surprising at the same time? Because I need that fucking word.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is this right now that, of course, there will be forensic astrology. Wow.
Yeah. Basically, it's just people who take the time that, like, the time and place that a murder or disappearance occurred and look for clues. And this is not a serious thing. I hate to say that, you know, I don't want to disparage the things that people do but
what you're saying is it's not like something you can go get a degree in and then, like, with that degree go get a job, right?
Right. Well, and this is, like, you'll never see or hear, like, in a documentary about somebody's murder, you know, and the FBI looked to forensic astrologer such and such and so and so to try and gain more clues and insights into the whereabouts of our murdered victim. Like, you'll never see that because largely, and it's to some degree, like, self-admittedly, these communities that do this are doing it for more of the entertainment value than actual, like, scientific merit or anything like that. But because of the nature of what they're doing, it is considered, quote-unquote, forensic astrology. If there is a known suspect or a known victim, they'll take those birth charts into account and see if they can point out things that say, oh yes, this guy definitely has it in him to be a murderer. Or on the flip side of that, they'll say, oh yeah, this person definitely has things in their chart that make them more prone to being victimized by others or that kind of thing. So it's interesting, but still kind of vague in that frustrating way that only astrology manages to be.
Oh, and meteorology sometimes.
Yeah, meteorology.
Even the meteorologists have a significant leg up on us astrologers. I feel that when you say that.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. So that was my down the rabbit hole segment.
I really appreciate that you shared that because. There's going to be an interesting two-part I'm going to come back with, or a part two, rather, a rebut, if you will. Because Stephen Forrest has this crazy fucking, essentially true crime story with a sort of forensic analysis of what went down, and just the way that it lined up is so wild that, I mean, on the one hand, he's not normally the kind of astrologer who gives a shit about using astrology in that way, so it was interesting to see, you know, that he had done that at a point.
Yeah.
And then the story's just wild. I think you appreciating true crime like you do will be like, damn. Just like that.
So is this like a, did you ever read Dolores Claiborne or what was the other one? Dolores Claiborne or is it Rose Madder? I don't know. Where it's like in these two totally separate lives, Stephen King wrote, you know, two completely separate books, but very big major things happened to each of these characters during a solar eclipse, or like,
oh, interesting.
One of them, their like abusive husband or somebody fell down a well, just a hole in the ground with like boards on top of it, and he was like in a murderous rage and he didn't see the boards there and walked over it and fell down the well. And basically once that happened, you know, the I think the titular character has like that moment of, what do? Do I save this person who is mean and horrible and beats me, or do I let him die down there? And so this all takes place during the solar eclipse that's happening. And then on the opposite side, in this totally different book, is like a little girl who is like being basically molested by her father for the very first time during a solar eclipse. And it like sets off a down spiral of events that occurs throughout the rest of the book. I can't remember for the life of me which book that is, though. But yeah, this is like all this crimey stuff happening during big spacey astrological events and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's interesting. I definitely did not know about those King books, and there are a lot that I don't know about because he writes a fuck ton of books. He's written so many books.
Dolores Claiborne is definitely one of those two books. I don't remember what the other one is, but regardless. Last little bit of business. Do you want to know what my word of the day is?
Yes, I do.
So it's very, like, pedestrian, I guess you would say. but, like, I would say, hands down, it's one of my favorite words. And I know it's one of my favorite words to say because I find a way to use it at least once a day. And that word is bamboozle.
Like, oh my god, yes.
I cannot get away from being like, oh no, you did me a bamboozle, or I am bamboozled, or uh-oh, he did you a bamboozle. Like, it might as well be like a catchphrase. I should just get the word bamboozle tattooed on me somewhere, because I say it as often as I can.
That would be, oh my god, that would be high quality shit posting, for one. like, okay, then, out of curiosity, was that, was it Doge and the memes that brought that to the forefront of your mind also? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks, Doge. You've done such great things for us.
Yep. It was definitely a byproduct of shitposting and it's all its related content.
That's amazing. I feel like, yeah, bamboozled was one of those words that just, like, didn't hear it anywhere except for, like, maybe Yosemite Sam or some other, like, weird, like, Southern or Western or, like, whatever stereotype cartoon character who only used it, like, once. And then, yeah, for it to just pop up in mass consciousness like this, thanks to memes, it's a great word.
Yep, it is. It is bamboozle. So yeah, that is my word of the day, my gift to you. Use it in a sentence today.
Is it time for some plugs?
I think so.
Who got the plug? Who is the plug? what are our plugs for today? I think mine has already surfaced earlier in the show, so if you need some instrumental classical music in your life from probably sometime in the early 20th century, I think. I do recommend that Ravel piece with the Grainger Orchestration, the Bells, whatever it is in...
Valley of the Bells, yeah.
Whatever it is in French. What about you?
Well, I am working my way through, I think, season 5 of BoJack Horseman, and I'm, just getting, like, this is my second time basically binge-watching my way through all of it, and it's just so good. I mean, it's witty, it's funny, it's existential in, like, the best possible way. All the struggles and, like, turmoil that characters experience is very real and relatable and tangible. You know me and how, like, I have a tendency to, as I like to say, live vicariously through other people's heartbreak. And BoJack is kind of good for that. Like, I like I like to feel bad and sad and kind of icky, but in a way that keeps me, like, at a safe distance. I can feel that and not wake up with an alcohol, you know, problem tomorrow. Just because BoJack, yeah, just because BoJack is an alcoholic doesn't mean I have to be one.
I like hearing about that because I'm always seeing BoJack, and I've never actually watched BoJack, and it seems like, you know, that's a big part of what draws people to it is its relatability in its rawness and stuff like that.
Very, very well written. Just like plot wise, there are episodes that feel very unique in the way that they were directed, I guess. I mean, even if it's animation, it's still directed in a certain way. And it does that cool thing where, like, the intro to the like, each season is sort of different just based on what's happening at the time in the show, you know? Mm-hmm. The environment around the intro changes, and I don't know. It's just, I love it, and I don't really care if anybody else hates it, because I love it enough for the both of us. So.
Yes. Speak your truth. Yeah. And do you feel like it did it kind of progress in a nice arc where it just kept getting better and better towards the end there? Or do you feel like there was a better season than maybe season 5? Or
that's a tough one. No, I feel like it does progress steadily. I don't know that it gets better and better. Like, every season is so like, they don't let anything go. You know what I mean? Like, stuff that happens all the way back in season 1 is still relevant and is still affecting what's happening in season 5. Oh, cool. So, I mean, it's very, that's why it's so well written. Like, everything just keeps coming back in very, like, it is, like, reliving your traumas, you know? Or it's, like, it's very strong, like, it makes a very strong point in sort of relaying that message that things don't just go away because you pile drugs and alcohol and, you know, addiction basically on top of it. Like, they stick with you, and they're gonna stick with you until you work your way through them. And even if you work your way through them, you've still hurt people along the way, and those people aren't going anywhere. So you, regardless, are going to have to make amends one way or another if you really want to heal from all of this. And like, that is just, like, the reoccurring theme throughout. Like, it's, I mean, you know, yes, there's hope. Yes, there are lights at the end of the tunnel, but you've done a lot of damage along the way, and you're going to have to acknowledge that some way. It's just very, it's so good.
Right on. I love that you phrase it that way, and it's like, that is just such a real thing. And I mean, even in a, like, I don't know, I feel like recently I've been really aware of that reality in a different way than I've been aware of it in earlier parts of my life, where it's like, it's kind of comforting to, like, see the interconnectedness of things on that level and, like, realize there's no escaping from it. And right. Rather than, like, feeling daunted by it or, like, whatever, spooked. 'Cause, like, it just is what existence in these bodies on this planet at this time is like. And there's no other place you need to be than where you are right now.
Yep. Yep.
Which, you know, I feel like that, at least for me, is a very easy thing to forget. You know, it's like worrying about what's ahead, always thinking into the future. And it can be an interesting way to get grounded back into the present and just feel comfortable with those sorts of things.
Yeah, just practice living in the moment a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, and we'll wrap up here pretty quick in a minute, but, like, there was that brief foray that I took into Buddhism, which I know you are very familiar with as well, but where, like, that's kind of one of the key components to being mindful is to just, like, don't think about yesterday, don't think about tomorrow, like, literally, like, just sit down and think about the cup of hot tea in front of you, you know, just, and don't, like, just be mindful of the moment that you're in right now. And, you know, if you can practice being in that mindset, then, you know, it just, it's a good triggering for, you know, just feeling that any kind of inner peace, you know, I mean, some inner peace is better than no inner peace. So.
God, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess with that being said, the plugs today were your classical music piece, BoJack Horseman, and mindfulness.
A mindful cup of tea, or whatever you like to drink.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
So right on.
Other than that, I guess we'll be back next week with more fun facts and witty banter about our Aries friends and lovers.
Round two, Mortal Kombat theme plays.
Yes, exactly. thank you for listening, and please follow us, hit us up on Twitter. We're on Instagram as the Gem and I podcast. We're on Facebook, or you can email us anytime at gemandipodcast@gmail.com. We always look for input from our listeners. We're always interested in questions that you might have, or you know, if you want to leave a catty comment or a catty remark, then, you know, that's fine. I don't mind. I can play that game. No big deal. or we can choose to be nice about it. It's up to you. You know,
the ball is in your court, fam.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. But yeah.
Oh, it was great chatting until today.
Then. Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
The Gemini Podcast is written and researched by both me and Alice. All of our sound production and editing is done by Alice Alistair, and all of our music, including our theme, comes from Uncertainty, Alice's one-of-a-kind solo act. Alice is also available for personalized natal chart readings. To learn more about availability and rates, reach out to us at thegemandipodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay curious, stargazers.